You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Monday, the 17th of October, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. We were hoping that Matthew Heidmark would be here, but he's been called off on some unforeseen business. Hopefully, he's going to be back with us tomorrow, but we do have a special guest with us who's happily he has decided to stand in for Matt, and I'm very, very grateful for him for doing this. And I wanted to talk to him for a long time. I'm talking about Jason Augustus from 14 Sacred Words. How are you doing today, Jason?
I'm doing great, Sven. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good. As I say, I've wanted to talk to you for a while. I'm a big admirer of your music. I used to be into heavy metal a long time ago, and I sort of went from heavy metal into electronic dance music. And then when I got into nationalism, I stopped listening to the dance music and got back into the heavy metal again. And the thrash metal and all the different sort of types of guitar music I appreciate. And your stuff really does seem to stand out from the crowd. It's very well produced, it's very polished, and a lot of that stuff I find you can't really tell the lyrics, but I can actually hear the lyrics in your music, and they're pretty clever as well. And I had quite a few questions for you about 14 Sacred Words, if you don't mind me asking about them. I thought probably the first one would be, were you always into that sort of music, or how did you come to be into that sort of thing, and what inspired you to pick up the guitar?
Well, getting into metalcore was kind of a transitionary thing. When I was younger, I was into black metal of, you know, like late 90s. So I was doing that sort of stuff and, you know, just kind of got into melodic death. And, you know, that changed into what is now metalcore. It's definitely taken a shift, but so that was kind of like what put me in that direction.
Well, it's good to see that the music's still around. I mean, I was into it, I suppose, in the 80s when Metallica, Master of Puppets album came out, and that sort of changed the metal scene, really. Up until then, you sort of had heavy metal. And then when that came out, suddenly there was thrash metal, and there was this double kick drum sound, like a sort of God of Thunder sound, the sort of noise you'd imagine Thor making if he was playing the drums. And that's what really sort of got me into it. And I can remember seeing Metallica and Creator, Slayer, Megadeth. I saw all those bands back then. And I'm really pleased today to see that these bands are still around, the music is still going, and the young people are still, it's still inspiring young people to become musicians. I mean, do you just play the guitar, or because I noticed that you've got keyboards in some of the music that you've produced?
Oh yeah, no, I play everything. I play bass, drums, guitar, keyboard, you know, lots of stuff. I mean, I play other instruments that I don't add in because they're not really, you know, metal, but yeah, for the 14 Sacred Words stuff, I do all that stuff.
Did you go to college to learn guitar or any particular instruments at all, or was it self-taught, or how did you sort of come to be playing so many instruments?
The instruments I kind of just sat behind in the studio one day and started messing around, so I'm self-taught on that. On the production end, I went to YouTube college and just went through all the tutorial videos and sat there and beat my head in for a little while, a few years, till everything started sounding somewhat presentable.
I suppose this is quite an advantage from when I was getting into music. You used to have to pay for somebody to teach you, and now you've got YouTube there, and you've got people putting everything out there how to do these things so that you can do them for yourself. I think it's a real shame that, in a way, it's a shame that music's now, so much of it is on MP3 and it's throwaway, because you could, you know, you could make a good living at it before and you could become a big celebrity, but there isn't so much of that now. But at the same time, you can make the music all for yourself. I mean, have you must have played in bands before, not just produced all your own music. Have you played in any other bands before?
Yeah, I played in a lot of bands growing up. When I was 17, I played in a grindcore band that got pretty popular. in that little scene. I also played in, I was a drummer for Grom and SBM stuff. So, I mean, the band dynamic, like having a full band there, is it's a lot different than having the complete control, over every instrument. So, I mean, it kind of helps, it kind of hurts, because you have the group dynamic throwing in their two cents. So you get like this kind of like, more, I don't want to say more organic, but kind of like, there's more hands in the cookie jar sort of deal. Whereas recording it on your own, you get your own vision 100% exactly the way you're thinking of it.
If you're in a band, you can feed off each other's energy and get a bit of a buzz when you're all coming in at the same time, playing and writing music together and making the stuff up. It can just be a buzz doing that as it is if you've got a group with you. It must affect the creative process, I would have thought, a bit, doing it all by yourself. But it seems to come out as if it's, as if you've got all these other musicians there listening to your EPs.
Oh, well, I mean, it definitely comes from my experience playing with musicians. I definitely wouldn't be able to make the songs the way that I make them if I didn't have that exposure to other musicians. Because it's just like, what would this guy have done here? I try to replicate what I remember things being as.
Do you miss that sort of buzz that you would get from the other musicians and playing out live?
Oh, yeah, every day, man. I mean, it's cool to have the complete control over the musical direction and all that stuff, but, nothing really beats just getting together with your buddies and jamming out.
I suppose another positive side of this with the technology that we have now and being able to produce it on your own is that you can collaborate with people that you've never met before as well. Have you ever done any of that? Sent off guitar tracks to other people so that they can then add their own bits to it? I know that goes on quite a lot.
Well, I've tried to do that with various musicians in the past. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Because everybody has their own way in the producing world. Like, sometimes they won't name their tracks right. Sometimes things just get messy. I find it a lot more productive to just work on my own with stuff. But I still have people who will like throw down a vocal track or something along those lines, but no drum tracks or bass, like nothing like fundamental would I really ask anyone to do.
Do you have a particular favorite instrument then? Would it be the drums?
I don't know. It's kind of like a toss up between guitar and vocals. I just like yelling.
I noticed one of the drum tracks that you had on the EP that did seem to be a little bit faster than was actually humanly possible. So was there technology involved in some of those drum tracks?
Well, I mean, technology's all over the place in all of this because I sample replace a lot of things. I blend all over. There's so much going on. But the like when you're doing blast beats and like ghost notes, those types of things, I kind of just amplify them. So I don't do anything outside of the realm of human possibility because I would like to play live one day, get a full band together and do it.
That would be really good to see. That would be good to see. And you can only go so far, I think, with writing it yourself, because that's what it is really about, is playing out and bringing the music to people. But another good side of this, I think, is with the sort of lyrics that you're writing, you're writing nationalist stuff as well, you can, with the way things are today, you can still remain fairly anonymous. You can still remain without your face being out there and still reach an audience, which you never had before the days of the internet, the white power bands, people knew who they were. And now you can sort of remain anonymous and still put the music out. Have you got anything new coming out soon? I believe there's something supposedly to be released in November.
Yes, that's going to be the full-length album. It's going to be 12 tracks. I'm doing one for the US and one for Europe, because my European label, they have some censorship issues, so I have to mess with the lyrics a bit so that nobody gets thrown in prison. So yeah, that's the closest upcoming project.
Do you have a title for that yet?
The title for the album is Not Alone.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, that's a lot about what this radio station is all about, is letting nationalists know that they're not alone, that they've got other people here that think the same way as they do, trying to inspire them and encourage them to do things. I think, you know, producing the music the way that you have, that should encourage other musicians to be doing the same. I know it's a different style of music, but you've got Xurious out there who is producing synthwave music all of his own. What do you think of this new sort of fashwave style of music? Have you heard much of it?
I've heard a little bit. I'm curious with that. I'm familiar with that dude. I love all that stuff, man. It's just amazing all the new stuff that's surfacing, and it's surfacing with our message. And I think that's definitely, you know, it's a real kick in the face to the establishment to know, you know, all the things that they tried to craft to use against us, we have now taken back based off our own merit. To kick them back in the face with it.
Well, I think it's really technically proficient as well. If you listen back to a lot of the old white power music, a lot of it's very simple, badly produced, and, you know, it's sort of throwaway stuff. But your music you can listen to again and again. It's polished, it sounds professional, and the same with Xurious and Cyber Nazi. You know, it's really polished stuff. Even the meme music, like White Hot Takes and Right Wing Death Squads. I mean, that stuff's really clever what they do there. Taking taking stuff that people have already heard and messing with the lyrics to get so that people laugh at it. You know, and it's, you know, that gets people to listen to it. When that Right Wing Death Squads YouTube was up there, that had so many hits. You know, and you can imagine if it's people going along playing that and people think it's just the original song and then they suddenly hear the lyrics and, you know, and before they know it, they're laughing because they haven't heard racist humor before. You
know, yeah. I think that's a really cool tactic, especially, you know, the Right Wing Death Squad guy, he's really, really great at what he does. He's a great producer. He's great at crafting the lyrics to our message. You know, I really like that approach. It's so many pronged approaches to this, and we still have, you know, we're all having fun while we're doing it. So it's you know, it's not like the evil empire plotting. It's just, you know, legitimately we're just having fun doing all this stuff.
Well, it's fulfilling, isn't it? It's using your talents to help your race. I mean, there's nothing better that you could really be doing. I think that's what. That's what we're for, is to do what we can for our race, for our nation. And if you've got talents, then that's what you should be using them for and contributing to what we're trying to do, to bring more people to our movement and to the cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I this is why I find all the things that we're doing with, you know, with music, with video and all this stuff is as long as you're, you know, you're doing what you love, for the people you love and the cause that you love, that makes it the most effective. I find that, you know, when you approach it with, a certain amount of adversity because you're upset about the way things are, your current situation, you know, it doesn't really come, it comes off, you know, without that really, that positive message that we really need.
Well, yeah, it shows that the sincerity behind it and integrity behind it. I think this is the important thing to get across, is that we are really sincere. We're not doing this for the money. You know, we definitely aren't doing it for the money.
Yeah, no, I you know, being banned from iTunes and Amazon MP3 and I can guarantee this is not for the money, because there's just no money coming in.
have you been banned from all those platforms then?
I didn't last more than a couple of days on there. You know, taken down for hate speech. I'm attacking religious groups, ethnic groups, you know, just a whole bunch of baseless claims, you know, just to get me down. And they make it really difficult. They're like, you know, nobody wants to be called the Scarlet R.
Well, what's the rest of the sort of metalcore scene like then? I mean, back when I used to listen to this stuff regularly, a lot of it was very satanic and, you know, talking about human sacrificing and all that sort of thing. It was over the top. I know it was just sort of like pantomime sort of style stuff, but I know that some of it gets pretty degenerate. And, you know, so even with the dance music, they used to have dance music going with pornography going on in the background, pornographic sounds. And yet you've got you there that's singing about racial issues and they ban you straight away.
Yeah, it's always been that, sorry, even that, even back in the, you know, the early 2000s, they had that ridiculous double standard. You can be Cannibal Corpse singing about putting people on meat hooks and cutting people up. You can sing about doing drugs and all this stuff. But the minute you say anything positive about, you know, white people, it's gotta go. It's just that's pushing the line.
Well, just to take it to looking at some of the music that you've produced, the Sacramento Spartans, was that the last one that you produced for 14 Sacred Words?
Oh, yeah, that was the last one put out, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. If I remember, that came out really pretty quickly after the events that actually happened there. Were you inspired to write that straight away? Did you get that done really quickly to get that out and draw attention to what had happened?
I mean, I had seen what was happening, and it was already the lyrics were kind of just playing over in my head in jumbled form. So yeah, it took me a little while to put down, you know, because there's a lot of elements involved in it. But yeah, it was an inspiring event, and I just had to make something for it.
Well, yeah, I think that it got a lot of views, and it drew attention to what was happening. Have you had much crossover with people that aren't really into nationalism, but that have sort of come to it through listening to your music or become interested in it from looking at your lyrics?
There's a lot of bands that, you know, when I was playing sort of like mainstream sort of metalcore stuff, that are like, you know, I agree with you, but, you know, can't really support it. Don't want to lose my job. Don't want to, you know, lose any of the contacts I have. It's like, you'd be surprised the amount of metalcore bands and just metal bands in general that actually really do, agree with what we're doing and agree with our message, but they're kind of just too afraid to say anything publicly about it.
Well, yeah, it's a very masculine form of music, heavy metal. I mean, it's always been masculine, anti-gay, and you would imagine that it would be pro-white. I mean, it's all made by white people. It's like the opposite of reggae music and black music. It even plays on the opposite beat to that style of music. It always seems to me that white man's music, the epitome of white man's music, if it's popular music, is going to be metal. You know, if you just count classical music.
Yeah, it's a really like a, I mean, it's supposed to be this, you know, brutal force, but, you know, over time, you know, because like you said, it used to be more into like the satanic stuff and the brutal stuff, but metalcore nowadays, at least the majority of metalcore, you will hear some Midwestern white kid complaining about his girlfriend breaking up with him or the latest scratch in his newest car. So, I mean, like, I think these record labels are just grabbing whatever they can that's like the lowest risk, because there are bands like 14 Sacred Words, maybe not as explicit, but definitely implicit, that they're not really trying to mess with. Because politicore is that's what they call it, politicore. You know, when you talk about political issues inside of metalcore music, they try to limit the amount of bands they put there because they realize that political climate just in contemporary America is getting pretty heated, and that nobody wants to be liable for anything as far as record labels go.
Well, I think, you know, that something changed really in the 80s when thrash metal really began. The lyrics, there were a lot of social commentary that started turning up in the lyrics then. And a lot of these hardcore bands that were about were commenting on things that were happening around them. And they weren't like social justice warriors. I mean, I couldn't really imagine this sort of music singing about Black Lives Matter or pro-feminism or pro-homosexuality. It's going to be wanting to sing about the opposite of that. And it comes from the people that have sort of been ground down and missed out on life. You know, it's the disaffected underclass that is producing that style of music, or it was back in the day when I was really into it. It wasn't the rich kids that were producing it. It was people that had life hard that were coming out with this music, and they were singing about the experiences that they'd had in life, and that would give them a chance to, you know, pull themselves up out of the gutter, as it were, and become famous. So I really can't imagine that there would be any style of metal music that's promoting feminism or Black Lives Matter. And I did hear that I think it was a guitarist or someone from Pantera that disassociated himself from racism. But I think that's the only one that I've heard come out and be explicitly anti-racist. So hopefully I'd like to see more metal singers and metal bands commenting on this sort of thing, because this is the most important thing that's happening to us. You know, we're being replaced by these other races. We're being invaded, and our space is being taken over, our territory is being taken over, our women are being raped by these monsters, and this sort of stuff needs to be sung about, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, no, that's what we should be talking about, but it's not what we're allowed to talk about, because the owners of all these major record labels, they're Jews, and they're not going to have you, urinating in their cornflakes. So it really is, it's left up to the individual, to use their skill set to really just get down and give it to them whether they like it or not.
Is there really a lot of Jews involved with the hardcore record labels then?
The major labels, it's always been them. Anytime there's big money to be found or exploitation of our people, even on a minor scale, like just bad record deals, it's always going to be them. Metal Blade Records, even Nuclear Blast, they have their share of the chosen ones. But those record labels are kind of dying off because of how convenient it is to record this stuff on your own. So they are actually very afraid of this new wave of people that are just doing it on their own, just because they love it and just because they're good at it, and they don't need their money anymore.
I mean, back in my day, it was Noise Records and Roadrunner Records, and they were sort of like minor labels. And then you had suddenly the Beastie Boys and Anthrax doing stuff with rappers, and you had Rick Rubin that was involved with Slayer. I think Rick Rubin was a Jew, but I'm not sure that the minor labels they probably did have a certain amount of these Jews involved, because the money that was involved back then with producing it, you know, to own a record studio and the mixing desk and all the rest of it, you know, you had to have a small fortune in the first place to afford that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. To record, at least on my end, I mean, I've spent a lot of time speaking to audio engineers in various studios, just trying to get a gist, because, you know, I wanted to be able to have a really, you know, polished sort of sound. A full-length album will probably run you between recording, mixing, mastering, all that stuff, without the artwork, without the distro, just the recording, mixing, mastering will run you at least $30,000 if you want something sounding professional. And that's where those major labels always get you. The independent labels that we have out right now, you know, like Label 56 that I work with here in the US, and Opus Records in Germany, is they offer as much support as they possibly can, but realistically, they can't throw $30,000 at you. So it really is up to, just how motivated you are, and honestly, just how much of a polished sound you're actually going for. Because, you know, not everybody necessarily is after that, but, you know, that's what I like.
Well, just so long as they can offer the distribution and the promotion, I know, suggest that that is a big help, because you're not going to be able to do that on your own, are you?
Oh, no, absolutely. The support network is the biggest thing for any of this. If I was just another metalcore band, like if this wasn't 14 Sacred Words, if this was like, you know, just a regular metalcore band, I would have so much trouble getting anybody to even give me a moment like to listen, because A, people have heard my message 1,000 times. If I'm crying about my ex-girlfriend, nobody cares. But also there's no support network there. I have you guys here. And just the nationalist scene in general, everybody props it up and the message gets spread. which is the most important part of it. But also just as a musician, you know, like I get to see my music actually reaching people.
Yeah, you get to know that people are appreciating it, that, you know, that you're using your talents in the way that they should be used. I mean, you do a lot of the cover artwork as well, don't you? And all the images and the propaganda. Yeah, how long have you been doing that for? Because, you know, you seem to be pretty talented at that as well.
Oh, thanks. It's kind of interesting. The way that I got into designing, like graphics design, is just because I was broke and did not want to pay hundreds of dollars to get album art done. So I picked up Photoshop and started playing around. This was before YouTube tutorials were really there. So it was just failure and failure and failure. But I wound up getting really involved in it. And it just became very useful in terms of making leaflets for the Worker Party and just, you know, various organizations that I work with that are, you know, need stuff.
Well, I was going to say, it certainly seems to have given the Traditionalist Worker Party a unique style in the propaganda that they produce. You know, you've got, there's a certain signature to it, a style to it, which is yours. And all this technology, it's really sort of broken it apart for the Jews, really, hasn't it? You know, we can print our own books now. We can make our own music. We can make our own images. We can do all this for ourselves. We don't need that Jewish middleman there anymore to creaming everything off the top and forcing us to not tackle these important subjects like the Jewish control of things, like the third world invasion of our countries. It's really broken things down, this technology. I think they thought the internet was just going to keep everybody dumbed down with pornography. You know, they had no idea that it was going to be used by us to break that grip that they had on us, especially that grip that they had on the artists, you know?
Oh, yeah. The Jew has spent thousands of years underestimating our people, and they're going to continue to do it. And, you know, hey, that's their folly. They think they got everything figured out, and then they realize, oh, oy vey, we don't. You know, I mean, they still try to mess with us on a lot of fronts. You know, as far as selling our music in stores, they intimidate places like iTunes into not selling our music, but they can't stop us from making it. So they're at a constant tit for tat with us. But I just see them losing here, and it's just funny to watch them like gasping for air in all of this.
Well, they're clutching at straws at the moment, especially going after this Trump campaign. They're clutching at straws. But the Jews have always been middlemen. That's all they've done is always been the middlemen. They've never actually been the creators. They've been the ones, you know, to sell stuff on, or to sort of almost like blackmail people into giving them money so that their stuff can actually be sold. And now that we've got this technology at our fingertips, you know, it's put them out of the job, really, isn't it? You know, they aren't needed anymore. So they're desperate to keep hold of it. You know, I see that it's just crumbling all around us, Jason. I think this is we're born at the greatest time, you know, in the last 70 years, I think, because we're living to see this Jewish stranglehold that's been on our people. We're living to actually see it finally broken. And a lot of that's been the technology that we have, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I mean, I got to hand it to the internet has definitely been the thing. I mean, because it's connected so many of our people. It has its ups and downs, you know, like there's misinformation out there. There's things misleading. You know, you'll have the Alex Jones types that are like, it's everybody. It's everybody. It's the global elite. It's everybody except the Jews. You know, like he'll never call them out. But you have, you know, it's just been a great thing, especially, I mean, I've talked to so many people in Europe, just young kids in Europe, people that aren't even involved in the cause that are telling me their stories, you know, like what they're facing regarding the refugees, you know, in quotations, and how difficult it is for them, and that I have to, you know, try to just generally let them know, like, you're not crazy, you're not alone. You know, this is they're losing. It doesn't feel like it right now, but they are.
Well, they're definitely losing. And thanks to the internet, you can connect with these people, and you can write and sing about this stuff, and people can listen to your music when they need to take a break from what's going on around them. But at the same time, they want to know that the person they're taking that break with, the person they're sharing their headphones with, thinks exactly the same way as they do. Jason, I know we could probably carry on talking for at least another half an hour. It's been really interesting talking to you today. I just want to say thank you very much for coming on and stepping in when Matt couldn't get in there. I really enjoy listening to your music. We're going to play out with some of your music right now, and hopefully Matt is going to be back here tomorrow. So thanks for coming on, Jason. Thanks, listeners, for listening, and hail victory.
Hail victory.
Tradition!